From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Developing nations making a determined bid to influence the Seattle Global Trade Talks agenda. Washington pressing for reforms to how trade disputes are settled by the WTO. And President Clinton wants better internet access in the third world. I'm Ken Richards and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Several developing countries have said that they'll boycott the upcoming round of WTO trade talks in Seattle because they've not felt the benefits from the last round of talks, the Uruguay round. They include some of the bigger and more influential developing countries like India and Pakistan. These developing nations say unless their demands are taken into consideration before and during the U.S. ministerial meeting, no new trade round should be initiated in 2000. Agence France Press journalist Jean-Louis de Lavassier is covering WTO issues at the organization's headquarters in Geneva. He told me the developing countries believe their position is justified.
They are threatening to boycott the negotiation because they think their demands are not being have not been taken into consideration. They want a better implementation of these agreements, and for most of them, they want a renegotiation of this agreement, something that is completely unacceptable, for instance, to the United States. Also, for some developing countries, it's difficult because they know that if an agreement will be reopened, it's a risk that the new agreement, which will be concluded, would be less profitable for them. So there is a rhetoric about that. They want renegotiation.
But do you think these states will actually go as far as boycotting the talks?
No, not the conference in Seattle. Everyone will be around the table at Seattle. But they have clearly threatened that they could refuse to sign an agreement at the end of the conference, preventing from launching a new round. The United States wants this conference in Seattle to be a success, but it will be very hard, because some of the developing countries like India have gained much support in their strong stances against fast liberalization of trade. The Mike Moore, the new director general, is very aware of the needs of the least developed countries, and he has insisted very much that the special needs being taken into account.
What has Mr. Moore been saying to the concerns being raised by these developing countries?
He has said to everybody, also to the developing countries, to show more flexibility, because he says what is at stake is better living standards, more new jobs, and you cannot afford failure.
Jean-Louis de Lavassier. WTO ambassadors have abandoned their attempts to reach agreement on what should be included in the next global trade round. That's because WTO members failed to narrow their differences on key issues, as the BBC's Claire Dool reports.
It's not unprecedented, but the failure to agree the agenda of a new trade round ahead of the WTO ministerial meeting in Seattle will put immense pressure on trade ministers to come up with a deal. The politicians will have just 4 days to achieve what the diplomats in Geneva have tried and failed to do in the past 3 months. Previous trade rounds have started without a formal agenda, but this time ambassadors haven't even been able to agree the options for agreement. The major sticking point is agriculture, pitting the big trading nations against each other. The US and major agricultural countries such as Australia want the EU and Japan to slash their export subsidies, which they say prices their producers out of the market. But this is unpopular with both trading powers, reluctant to incur the wrath of their heavily subsidized but politically influential farmers. The other problem area is the demand from developing countries for more time to implement existing trade accords. The WTO Director General remains confident that agreement will be found in Seattle. But trade envoys are not so optimistic.
Claire Dool in Geneva. The U.S. Deputy Trade Representative, Susan Essaman, says she'll be pressing the World Trade Organization to reform the way it resolves trade disputes. The Americans are hoping to table their proposals at the World Trade Organization meeting, which starts this month and in Seattle. Orrin Gordon reports.
Caribbean countries that lobbied hard for the European Union to keep their preferential pricing arrangement had a close-up look at the long and sometimes complicated complaints procedure. The complaint was brought by the U.S. on behalf of Latin American banana farmers, and it was only close to the Seattle meeting that the European Commission hammered out a settlement. One U.S. interest group that's unhappy with the complaints procedure is farmers. They're trying to get Europe to lift the ban on their hormone-treated beef, and for them it's taking too long. The U.S. wants dispute settlement panel reports to be released immediately, and countries should be required to make public the legal briefs they file in these cases. If the U.S. had its way, the proceedings would also be open to the public. America will be major players in Seattle and might just be influential enough to have its way. That's one reason why the former Trinidad and Tobago Finance Minister Wendell Muttley thinks the Caribbean's approach to the talks will have to be an expensive one.
You've got to spend the money to get the very best research done, to face very, very professional people with depths of staff and lawyers up there that would shock you. You have to spend in an industry that may be worth the Caribbean several hundred million U.S. dollars. You have to be prepared to spend 10, 15, 20, 25 million U.S. dollars in preparing your case to go to have any influence at all.
The Barbadian minister responsible for trade is Billy Miller, and she admits that Caribbean and other countries have an uphill struggle to make their voices heard.
Seattle is going to be difficult. It's going to be contentious. What we want to do is to build as strong a support, not only among developing, but even some developed countries, if we can garner that support for the issues which we consider to be of high priority to us.
The Caribbean and other developing countries will have their friends, but they're likely to be outside protesting rather than inside trying to help shape policy. The charities that share Caribbean concerns about globalization plan to have a presence in Seattle. A week and a half to go, and the atmosphere is heating up.
Orrin Gordon, so is there really a need to reform the WTO dispute settlement arrangements? That's a question I put to Kim Elliott, a research fellow at the International Institute of Economics.
I think there are several problems, but one that the U.S. is trying to address is the one that emerged in the dispute over bananas. There's basically an inconsistency in the language of the dispute settlement understanding. Under the rules, if a country is going to retaliate because it thinks there's a continuing violation, it has to do so within a certain amount of time after the implementation period expires. And so that's what the U.S. moved to do. The European Union then responded, but who's to say that we're not in compliance? The U.S. cannot do it unilaterally. And so they argued that there had to be sort of another decision by the WTO whether or not they were in compliance before the U.S. could retaliate. And so it was basically a timing issue, and there was just an inconsistency. And that inconsistency really does need to be clarified if the dispute settlement system is going to work properly.
But in the case of Caribbean bananas, Washington eventually got its way. Surely winning the battle is more important.
What you don't want to do, what would undermine the dispute settlement system, is if you had to go through the entire two-year process over and over again, then obviously you're not going to get any resolution to the dispute. So I think the idea would be to more or less codify what happened in that case, whereby if there is an agreement at the end of the compliance period, then you have a very short, I think it was 30 to 60 day review by the WTO, and then a decision on retaliation is made, again, you know, by the WTO to authorize or not.
But isn't time needed in the resolution of complicated matters of trade?
I think it's an up to 15-month period after a panel ruling is made, during which the defendant country is supposed to change its policies to come into compliance with the panel ruling. So one thing that you would want to do, and I think this has been proposed, as I say, by the EU, is to have more consultation during that 15-month period about the measures that the defendant country is taking to change its policies, more interaction, more discussion with the complaining country, with the WTO, to see whether or not the changes they're making are going to actually bring them into compliance before the end. I mean, 15 months, it's a relatively lengthy period of time. And the idea, I think, is that you want to have, you know, sort of progress going on steadily throughout that period rather than leaving it to the very last minute. So that's the idea, is the short period would be at the end of a fairly lengthy period of implementation.
Kim Elliott, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The Commonwealth Ministerial Action Group says it's continuing to closely monitor developments in Pakistan following the recent military coup there. The daughter of deposed Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has called on Pakistani prosecutors to spare his life if he's found guilty at his forthcoming trial. Mr. Sharif is accused of treason and conspiracy to murder. The charges are based on his alleged attempts to prevent a plane carrying General Musharraf from landing in Pakistan just before the general launched his coup. Foreign Minister Billy Miller represents Barbados on the Commonwealth Ministerial Action Group. As to how concerned the organization was about fears that Mr. Sharif could face execution on some of the charges.
Our first concern was that the due process, the rule of law, should be engaged and that it would be a free and fair trial. This trial, we were satisfied, is a trial by civilian judges. We were a little concerned at first when we thought that it might have been a tribunal of some kind. But this is a court set up, apparently, by Mr. Sharif himself. And we were assured that there were civilian judges and there would be due process.
There is the view held by some that the Commonwealth may have failed to bite the bullet when it declined to impose further sanctions. Is that a view you share?
No, it's not. Where there has been a military takeover, we have a process, and we have been following that process quite carefully. The Commonwealth sent a mission in very quickly after the takeover, and we are following that process. The heads of government in South Africa at their meeting were guided by the advice of the CMAG that this stage of the process is one where we will do what we can to help Pakistan back to democracy and satisfy ourselves that not only Mr. Sharif, but all of those who have been detained will be allowed the due process of law and that the rule of law would be seen to be engaged in Pakistan.
Was the decision taken by the Commonwealth reflecting the support you found in Pakistan for the coup?
It's difficult to say that. We were there just for 36 hours, and I don't know that we... Well, certainly I am not in a position to say how Pakistanis have viewed our action, but there was some discomfort because there was a misunderstanding. It was thought that the CMAG had suspended Pakistan. Indeed, it has not.
Barbadian Foreign Minister Billy Miller. U.S. President Bill Clinton has urged leaders of developed nations to encourage access to the Internet as a means of promoting growth in the world economy and fighting poverty. Kimberly Andrew takes a look at how the Internet has progressed in the Caribbean.
The Internet is still a new medium for some parts of the Caribbean. However, it has come a long way since its inception over the region within the last decade. Now most countries, if not all, have their own designed web pages promoting their island, as well as many interactive chat rooms, radio stations and Caribbean newspapers. These are mainly entertainment-based and used for information purposes only. But what President Clinton is suggesting is that the Internet become a part of everyday life, benefiting the community financially. But with limiting factors including expensive phone connections where there are connections, mountainous parts and restricted infrastructure, is the Caribbean ready to make that sort of commitment? According to Cresseline, the chief executive officer of Internet service provider Sunbeach in Barbados, nearly 15% of the households have access to the Internet. He said the other islands are suffering because of a lack of competition with service providers, but he feels this will change.
Most of the islands in the Caribbean operate in a monopoly environment. And in a lot of them, the Internet is specifically sort of covered by the monopoly agreement, so we can't actually get in there to set up. I would be very surprised if any of them actually run their full course in their current form.
The Organization of Eastern Caribbean States has decided as policy that as part of universal service, Internet access would be included. Project manager of OECS Telecommunications, Donny De Freitas, feels that the introduction of competition will benefit the consumer.
We do agree with President Clinton on the issue, and perhaps if President Clinton will go as far to put some money down here where he has indicated, we will be only too willing to accept it. We are going even further in providing Internet training in informatics, which is any activity where IT is a core activity for the countries of the OECS.
In St. Vincent, a toll-free number to an internet provider helps lower the cost, while in others like St. Lucia, paying per minute can prove quite costly.
Kimberly Andrew ending today's edition of BBC Caribbean Report, and I'm Ken Richards saying goodbye from London.